The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Exopolitics, paranormal phenomena, and deep analysis of current world events from somewhere in the desert between Area 51 and Roswell, blasting across the planet, the Manticore Network proudly presents Veritas, because the truth will set you free.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
They were too fast to be an airplane.
I think it's time to open the books on the question of government investigations of UFOs. We ought to do it really because it's right. We ought to do it because the American people, quite frankly, can handle the truth. And we ought to do it because it's the law.
Be skeptical. Do be as skeptical as you want, but by all, don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas, where we uncover the truth, one guest at a time. For those of you who dare to seek, Veritas is the place where you shall find. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, make yourself at home. I want to thank all our members. As always, you are keeping Veritas alive. Tonight, one more time, we stay in our core topic, UFOs, and our guest is another crusader for disclosure. This man puts his money where his mouth is and has been instrumental in pushing the Brazilian government to disclose what they know. Tonight's special guest is AJ Guevard. AJ is in Curitiba, Brazil, and will be with us shortly. I have received a lot of positive feedback about last week's show with Dr. Brooks Agnew. What a fascinating interview that was. His outlook reminds me of Robert Morningsky. And speaking of Robert Morningsky, not to be confused with Robert Morningstar, he will be on Veritas once again very soon. In addition, we are working together on something. Can we call it Veritas Vision Quest? Maybe. I'll let you know once I can provide more details. And I'm currently broadcasting from the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, and have met some of you and the distinguished panel of speakers. I will give you more information of my experience during next week's show. And what a great time this is to be a Veritas member. I know times are tough, but how much is a piece of candy these days? For only 20 cents per day, or $7 per month, you can have access to all our shows, 65 so far, and all our feature shows, the Manticore Forum and the Veritas chat room. And when I say that my interaction with you does not end with Veritas, it only begins, I really mean it. Drop by the forum, and I can tell you, it's not the kind of forum you may be expecting. And once again, I'm putting a call out to bloggers who want to collaborate with your news to the Veritas blog. Get in touch with me, we will review your blog, and we'll give you access to our blog, and we'll give you credit if we mention your stories on the air. So get in touch with me, and include the word blogger on the subject of your email. And a number of you have contacted me asking me if I would broadcast via XM Sirius satellite radio. I haven't considered it, but may entertain it. Get in touch with them and tell them you want XM Sirius to carry Veritas. The power to make this done lies with you. And one last thing before we go to tonight's guest. I'm looking to revamp our website. Remember when we conducted the Veritas video contest? Well, I'm starting the same with a new website. As you know, what you see and what you hear is done by me, and my expertise is very limited. So if you are a web designer and would like to provide your services and revamp our website with a slicker look, this is your opportunity. I don't have that many resources to give you, but I will give advertising to the finalists and to the winner. You will choose the winner. When I say you, I mean the audience will choose the winner. You will vote for the best website design. Get in touch with me again, mail@veritasshow.com, and let me know if you're interested. I will start posting instructions shortly. And now, get ready to go to South America, Brazil, and deep inside the Amazon forest to discuss some of the most important UFO cases Brazil has ever seen. Did you know Brazil has its own version of Roswell? But with more witnesses who even came out immediately after the incident, people who saw the beings, and one was even captured by a policeman who later died when his immune system was compromised. Did you know there is a case where cylindrical UFOs harassed an entire city to the point its citizens couldn't take it anymore and took it upon themselves and knocked on the governor's door, who in turn involved the Brazilian Air Force and even experienced a close encounter of the third kind? This and much more coming up next. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Music you hear right here on the Veritas Show is supplied by the independent artists from Jamendo.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to our homepage, VeritasShow.com, click on the guest, look up the song, and download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases right there at Jamendo.com.
This is Jordan Maxwell, and you're listening to Veritas.
A.J. Gevaert, better known in the United States as A.J. Gevaert, studied chemistry in several universities in Brazil. In 1986, he quit his career as a chemistry teacher to research flying saucers full-time. A.J. is the founder and editor of the Brazilian UFO magazine. He is also founder and director of the Brazilian Center for Flying Saucer Research, the largest organization of its type in South America. With over 1,200 members, for over two decades, he has been the only full-time UFO researcher in Brazil. In 1983, he was appointed by Dr. J. Allen Hynek to be representative of the Center of UFO Studies, CUFOS, in Brazil. AJ is the creator of the group UFOs Freedom of Information Now. He heads this Brazilian committee of UFO researchers that has recently examined secret UFO documents in Brazil's official military UFO disclosure. And directly from our Veritas virtual studio in Curitiba, Paraná, Brazil, I would like to welcome one of the foremost researchers and publishers on the planet, a champion in every sense of the word for disclosure, and someone who has been working in the trenches to force disclosure for decades. Ladies and gentlemen, A.J. Gevaert. Hello, A.J., and welcome to Veritas. How are you?
Hello, Mel. Thank you very much for this introduction. Actually, it's a kind of a lot of things. I'm not that much, but I try to do my best here to get people to know more about UFOs.
That's very humble. AJ, you are known worldwide. I'm glad that we finally made contact for over a year now. Some of your fans around the world have been contacting me asking, when are you going to interview AJ? So we finally made contact. So I'm glad that we are here.
Yeah, I'm glad too. Thank you very much for inviting me and for having me in your show.
It's great to have you on, AJ. I can't help but notice that when we start talking about countries with a preponderance of sightings, Invariably, Brazil always comes in the top countries as a hotspot of UFOs. What makes Brazil so different than other countries in, say, South America?
I have been asking you this same question over and over in my many trips around the world where I go to either to lecture or to investigate cases. What makes Brazil different? Well, I don't know. I don't have a definite answer to that. But I guess that one of the characteristics that makes Brazil different, I don't mean special, but different, is that here most people, as well as in other countries in South America, most people have this natural way of seeing the UFO phenomenon. We started investigating this very early. I mean, the whole community in Brazil, like in the 40s, we started investigating UFOs. And unlike in any United States, we didn't have any secrecy at the beginning. Now, you remember that just after Roswell, which was in the 40s, late 40s, it was started a series of politics moves to cover up the UFO information. And this encouraged a lot of people to investigate UFOs, and a lot of people who were seeing UFOs in the United States were discouraged to come forward and to describe what they have seen, because they would not be taken serious. There was a big political, military movement against the UFO reality in the 40s, in the 50s, and in the 60s in the United States. And unlike that, in Brazil and most countries of South America, except for a period of time in late 60s and early 70s when we had military dictatorships here, except for that period of time, and in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, we didn't have any secrecy at all. We didn't have anything to suppress information. So people would come forward and tell what they have seen, and they wouldn't be ridicularized, they wouldn't be laughed at. And for instance, Mel, Brazil was actually the first country in the world to officially recognize the UFO phenomenon. It happened in 1952. Now, lots of people think that France, in 1976, was the first country to recognize officially the UFO phenomenon. But it was not. At least 15 years before, in Brazil, in 1952, a man, a colonel named João Adil de Oliveira, which was one of the top officers in Brazil, he was absolutely convinced that the UFO phenomenon was something for real. And he took a trip to the United States to get more information mates at the U.S. Air Force. And he got a lot of information. And he came back to Brazil. He assembled a meeting of reporters from several newspapers and several magazines at that time. Can you imagine that in 1952? People from society, people from all sorts of lights, people, military people, socialites, celebrities, authorities. And the place was crowded with over 1,000 people. And he declared in all full words, the UFO phenomena is very serious, and we are taking care of this business, investigating it as deep as we possibly can. This was admitted back in 1952 by a military in Brazil. Now, this set of things makes Brazil different. And if you look into Argentina or Chile, Peru, Ecuador, Bolivia, and Paraguay, I wouldn't say much because these are very poor countries. But Colombia and a few other countries in South America, and even in Central America, you will find almost the same behavior, the same idea about the UFO phenomenon. We are pretty open about it here.
Now, 1952, such a significant
date for, I'm speaking from the perspective of an American, because as you probably remember, well, not remember because you were not born, nor was I, the 1952 flyover over the Capitol in the United States. Now, is this something that there's an actual recording of this military person saying that the UFO phenomena is serious?
Oh, yes. Not a recording, but this was watched. And this was, and the audience was about 1,000 people. It was published in the newspapers at the time, all newspapers, and especially a magazine which has used to have a very large circulation in Brazil called The Cruzeiro. It was the same magazine that in the 50s, in the 60s, published a lot of information about UFOs. Now, at that time, this circulation was, this magazine had a circulation larger than many magazines today, because one of its major subjects would be the UFO. And when the cover carries something about UFOs, and then you would have a lot of acceptance from the people. And this magazine covered the Colonel's speech in full. You can find it over the internet, either in Portuguese or in English. It has been translated in several languages, because this is a milestone. This is something very big, very powerful that happened at that time.
Absolutely. It's definitely a milestone. And you may know that in the United States, after Roswell, when the CIA became an institution, a renegade institution, as our former president Eisenhower said, they started an approach of ridicule, of making people feel embarrassed to even talk about this. And from the term flying saucer, it turned to UFO. You know, something that makes people cringe when they hear it, you know, little green man, etc. So a lot of people don't talk about this. Not only that, but the CIA, some people have said that they own some of the tabloid newspapers, like the National Enquirer, for example, is another example of the approach that the government has in order to keep the tabs on the UFO phenomena. But what you're telling me is that in South America, and in Brazil, Chile, Venezuela, Colombia, the larger countries, it seems to be a little bit more open in terms of admitting, of acknowledging this. But in the case of Brazil, a few years ago, you spearheaded a group of people to force the government to acknowledge, and I believe you accomplished some of this with the Air Force. Am I right?
Yes, so you are right. We started back in March 2004 a campaign, civilian campaign, asking the government to come close, to come open about it, and to disclose its documents. We collected over 70,000 subscriptions, actually signatures in a petition that from people who would support our idea. And we have several websites all over the country publishing the terms of this campaign over and over and over, and sending email messages to lots of people. So going to the press and doing a lot of noise. This is what we do, a lot of noise. And then we finally, on January 2005, we got the military attentions. And someone called me at my office. I was living in Campo Grande by that time. And when I answered the phone, was this guy from the Brazilian Air Force, a spokesman from the Brazilian Air Force, a colonel also called Marco Federico, and he asked me a few information about what we intended to achieve with our campaign. And then he informed me that he and the Brazilian Air Force command was fully aware of what we are asking, and that they considered our request fair. And the commander of Brazilian Air Force instructed this gentleman to tell me that me and my team, the Brazilian Committee of UFO Researchers, we were invited to go to Brasilia, the federal capital, mm-hmm. to visit the headquarters of the Brazilian Air Force, to see the radar's room, the archives room, the meetings room, the situation rooms, to see all the general, the headquarters of the Brazilian System of Defense and Air Traffic Control, and also the Brazilian Command of Air Defense, the Brazilian Air Defense Command, which is equivalent to a NORAD in the United States. And this meeting took place on May 20, 2005. And then we go. All the six members of the Brazilian Committee of UFO Researchers for the very first time were received at military installations, very sensitive military installations in Brasilia, to discuss UFOs. And we were given a chance to visit all the rooms, to see how the radars operate, how they detect unidentified flights or unidentified targets, which they call, and we learned at that time, that they call these targets, which are unidentified, as traffic age, or traffic hotel in aeronautic speech, traffic hotel, traffic age or TH. And at some point we learned that traffic age or UFOs in most of cases have been detected and sometimes investigated for decades, that there are books and books and books of reports coming from pilots, from operators, from military personnel on ground, airborne, all sorts of situations in which traffic age have been detected or seen or pursued. There are hundreds of cases. Now, later on, we found out that there are 12 tons, it means 12,000 kilos of papers, photos, evidence of traffic age in Brazil alone since the 50s. And then, as part of our demand was to have the chance to see the documents or some of the documents that we requested in our campaign. Now, this is very important, Mel. Let me tell you something. When we decided to go in this campaign back in 2004, we have the knowledge, the common sense to know that it wouldn't happen if we ask the government or the military to open their files in a general way. Something like, hey guys, you have to open all your files to us. It would never happen. We have to be precise.
Slowly.
And we have to tell them precisely what we wanted. So it's counterproductive to ask for 1,000 files. Let's ask for 3. But let's us select the 3 files as best as possible. And what we did, we selected 3 cases, very important cases, in which we knew for sure and we had proofs that the military were involved. Because when we presented our petition to them, said, we want these 3 cases disclosed. And if they come to us and say, we know nothing about it, and we would say to them, yes, you do, because you are involved in here and here and here. Here are the papers that prove that you are involved. We have it all. So they couldn't tell us we don't know anything about it. They have to come clean about it because we already knew that they were involved. And the 3 cases that we asked were, first, from the 70s, Operation Saucer, when UFOs were officially investigated by a team from the Brazilian Air Force in the Amazon. We can talk further about it later. Second, from the 80s, what we call a case that we call the official night of UFOs in Brazil, when over 20 UFOs were pursued by seven jets in one night. And we also have information that the military were involved. But, of course, they were piloting the jets. And from the 90s, the Virginia case, the capture of at least two, but perhaps more creatures, in the state of Minas Gerais on January 20. And again, military were involved. And we have this information too. So we presented our demands, our petition, based on the street material, on the street cases. Give us information about these street cases. And let's see what they would do. Now, when we visited the headquarters in Brasilia, they showed us a couple hundred pages of Operation Saucer. It didn't impress us very much because we already had over than 400 pages that leaked it before and some dozen pictures. And they showed us some information about the second case, which was the official night of UFOs in Brazil that happened in 1986, of which, Mal, we now have hundreds of new pages. But when we were at the general quarter, the HQ in Brasilia, they only showed us a few pages. And they said nothing about Virginia. Instead of Virginia, they showed us some other material about other cases that we didn't request, but that's okay.
To begin, yes.
It's something like an act of goodwill.
Right.
And it was great. We left the building by 3 or 4 p.m. We had a lunch with them. They offered us a lunch. We had a lunch with the the high team of the Brazilian Air Force, and where we discussed UFOs. And then we head back home with lots of hope that our contact with the military would be close from now on, because we were given the promise, we were made the promise by them that it's up to time to start a commission or a committee for UFO investigations composed by civilian UFO researchers and military. And this is what we wanted in the first place. We want the papers, we want the information, we want the disclosure, sure, but we also want to establish a committee of scientific UFO research composed by members of the Brazilian civilian UFO community and members of the military. It's about to happen, because in the last 2 years or 2.5 years, we have started a new strategy in our campaign. Because after May 2005, when we were at HQ in Brasilia and we were given this promise, nothing happened. Brazil has been sucked into a lot of corruption scandals from June 2005 to the end of 2007. Well, actually, they are endless. We are having scandals all the time. But there were some very big stuff that we have for over 18 months after our visit. And perhaps this was the reason why our further demands weren't accomplished. So by the end of 2007, we decided we could wait no longer. And we changed our policy, our strategy, and we went tougher over the guys, demanding for more information, and actually acting according to the law, demanding the government and its several departments in the terms of law with something which is close to a lawsuit against the Brazilian Air Force, against a few institutions, following the rules of the law. Because we had a law here that says that some documents classified as secret classified or top secret. They have to be disclosed to the population after a certain number of years.
Right.
And this period of time has all expired. So by law, some documents should be known by the public. But the government just forgot about it, and we had to remind it. So we did everything we could, and in this process, eventually, some departments of the Brazilian Air Force and the Brazilian government just woke up and started doing what they're supposed to.
But AJ, do you think the government forgot, or did they hope that you and people like me forgot?
Yes. That's what I mean. When I said the government forgot, it pretended. It forgot. It never forgot. The government knows perfectly well what is its responsibility, what is its duties.
Sure.
But they pretended they forgot. But we never forget. And we start doing what we're supposed to. What we wanted, Mel, was the documentation to come available to the public, not to the UFO researchers. We never requested documents should be given to me or to any of my colleagues in the Brazilian Committee of UFO Researchers. We never requested that. We wanted the documents to be open to the public. And as we are public, certainly we would have the chance to examine this material.
This is very interesting because I'm just thinking, when you made the approach to the Brazilian Air Force, who do you believe authorized them to proceed and start disclosing to you? Who was the person in charge?
Well, actually, it was someone very close to the president, who's running for presidency at the end of this year. She's the head of a committee that's in charge of releasing material that was once secret or top secret. There are several levels of secrecy. A document, not only about UFOs, but about anything like torture in the military dictatorship period, the material can go from confidential to top secret. There are four levels. When it's confidential, before the law that says it has to be made public in certain years, it used to be 20 years. Now it's only 5. Now, top secret used to be 50 years. Whatever was classified once as top secret should be kept secret for 50 years. Now it's only 25. Now, and most things like Operation Saucer official night of UFOs in Brazil, this period of time has already expired. So they were supposed to give us this information. But also, not only that, not only there was a law that says that they should make this material available, but also we count on the sympathy with lots of people in the military. Lots of people. We now have in our movement colonels, generals, brigadiers, top ranking military from the Brazilian Air Force supporting, and not only supporting, but also taking part in our movement. Can you imagine the man that used to be the commander of the Brazilian Aerial Defense Command, which is equivalent to NORAD, United States. This man, who used to be the commander of that department back in the beginning of this last decade, 20 to 21, actually, from 2001 to 2002, Brigadier José Carlos Pereira, who was the owner of the key of the safe, now he's part of our movement. He is part of the Brazilian Committee of UFO Researchers. Can you believe that?
No, I cannot. And you know, AJ, about a year ago, you probably have heard of the Bay of Campeche case in Mexico. I know this is probably not your jurisdiction, but people around the world heard about it. The Air Force gave the tape to Jaime Maussan, And I decided that instead of interviewing Jaime Maussan, I wanted to go directly to the source. So I made my approach to the Mexican Air Force all the way up to the actual spokesperson, Brigadier General. I have his name. I have a letter. And they agreed to do an interview. They agreed to do an interview with me. But less than 12 hours before the interview, they found out that I was in the United States, and they canceled the interview. So my question to you is, do you feel that the United States government has some kind, I don't want to use the word jurisdiction, but influence in the Brazilian government or other governments in the Southern Hemisphere? When they start getting too hot or they start disclosing too much, do you believe that the U.S. government puts the brakes on them?
Well, not now as strongly as it used to be before, but it still does. United States' influence over Brazil and most countries of South America is very strong. We depend on the United States in a series of things. But now it's not that much as it used to be in the past. Now, to reply to your question properly, let me quote what a very top ranking military told me once. We're having this conversation because this gentleman was very well informed of everything that was going on in the military, as he was a brigadier from the Brazilian Air Force, in the UFO field. He was very well aware of what was going on in the Amazon. He used to be in the top positions of airfields all over the country, and he has the number of the president in his cell phone.
Huh.
Okay, so you know that we're talking about somebody who's very, very hot.
Sure.
My thing in life is to pursue information about UFOs in a very serious way. And I have devoted a lot of time to investigate what is called the Operation Saucer. You know, there was a colonel that investigated it. He assembled a team of military to investigate UFOs in the Amazon. We're talking about what the documentary, the History Channel Brazil's Roswell, is about.
Well, just before you go on, why don't you explain to the audience what Operation Saucer is? If I remember, it was in the Amazon, and these orbs or these cylinders were actually attacking people, and people went to the actual governor of Pará, the province in the Amazon, and that's how it started. Am I right?
Yes, you are right, and you are very well informed.
Okay, so please explain.
Yes, because there is a lot to talk about it. Let's just finish my quotation.
Sure.
Now, this gentleman that I was speaking about, he was very well aware of the information, of the Operation Saucer. And I had a problem about Operation Saucer, which I'll discuss with you further in a second, which was one of the goals of the Operation Saucer was to take a close encounter with the superior intelligences beyond the phenomenon. Because there was already a clear notion that there was superior intelligences commanding the phenomena of flying objects, of cylinders, spheres, everything in the Amazon. Now, this military and I have agreed that the most important goal of the Operation Saucer was to be in contact with aliens. And it actually happened, and I'll tell you how it happened, official contact with alien in a second. But strangely, after it happened, the Operation Saucer was shut off, was canceled. Now, it's very unreasonable to think that you would assemble a team of researchers to go to the jungle to investigate UFOs with orders to establish contact with the intelligence beyond that phenomenon. And when you do, your superiors tell you, okay, that's done, close it, bring me all your men, give me back all the documents, all the equipments, and forget about it. Oh, come on. It can't just be serious. Of course, that Operation Saucer continued under a different status, more secret, closer, you know, in a much more
clandestine.
Now, when I asked this gentleman if he agreed with me, he said, of course, AJ, Operation Saucer never stopped. It continued. It continued under a different level. And I asked him, and this is to get to your point, and I asked him, was Operation Saucer conducted by U.S. military by the time when it was closed, when it restarted under this different format? He looked at me and said, you're kidding me? If it wasn't for the Americans, we wouldn't have gas for our airplanes. We wouldn't have tires. We wouldn't do anything. We needed U.S. assistance so bad that without it, we wouldn't have done anything at all. So this answers to your question.
Yes, it's the dependence on aid, dependence on exports, etc. I totally understand. And I think that's
in the case of Operation Saucer directly. Now let me tell you what was Operation Saucer.
Yes.
I think that your listeners, yeah, they must have heard about Operation Saucer because I've been speaking about it for quite some time. And this documentary that I just spoke about, the History Channel Brazil's Roswell, which is a very bad name, Brazil's Roswell, there was nothing like Roswell. There was a different thing, but the History Channel was having this Chile Roswell, they're having like Mexico Roswell, Argentinian Roswell, whatever, Russian Roswell, and then they have Brazil's Roswell. That was very wrong name. But anyway, Brazil's Roswell was screened in over 100 countries by the History Channel and other subsidiaries. And I took part of it as a consultant. Actually, I served as an inspire for this program. And it wouldn't have happened if I had not contributed with all my material and all my information in change for nothing, let me tell you, because I didn't got absolutely nothing from the History Channel or the company that was hired by them to do the film, nothing at all. But anyway, this is not what I was intending to have anything in return, but at least we got our word across, all the world. Now, what was Operation Saucer? Operation Saucer was, as far as we know, Mel, and we don't know anything bigger than this, as far as we know, it was the biggest military operation known so far dedicated to investigate the UFO phenomenon, with the clear notion that the UFO phenomenon in this situation was from extraterrestrial origin. It started back in September 1977, a few months before, there were occurring in the state of Pará a lot of sightings, pursuits of people, and sometimes people, witnesses, would get hurt by balls of light that would come from space and direct beams of light towards them and produce some sort of burning, especially in the shoulders, in the arms, and in the necks. And in 70% of the case, 75% of the case, in women. This was called by people as suck phenomenon, because people would faint after being attacked. And when they would recover conscience, like a few minutes, sometimes a few hours, and in a few cases, some days, they could stay fainted for days. When they would recover, they will feel like a mimic, like their blood were missing. And actually, that symptom was confirmed by a doctor which was taking care of the victims in this small island called Colares. Now, the light is Cecin Carvalho. She took care of at least 300 victims. We can't tell they are witnesses because they're more than witnesses, because they have been attacked for some reason that we don't know of. And at least four people died.
They're victims or experiencers.
Yes. Yes, they're victims. 300 victims out of a population of about 6,000. 300 victims, the known victims, and out of 300, at least four people died. It happens only at that time, never again after 77. Now, by the months of July and August, the situation in the island of Colares was critical. People are being attacked even during daytime. It was a very bad situation. Nothing could be done to stop the attacks. So the authorities of the small village went to the governor of the state, who then asked the Brazilian Air Force, because it was something airborne, so whoever should take care of that was the Brazilian Air Force. And the Brazilian Air Force there assembled a team of military to investigate the thing, what was going on. The man that was asked to be the commander of this operation, which had no name by that time, was a captain called William G. Bolivar Soares Nogueira de Holanda Lima, which is a hell of a long name. Let's call him,
yes.
Let's call him William G. William G. was a very smart guy. He was the chief of the parachute search and rescue in the Amazon. You know what I mean? That man had the nerve, the courage to jump from an airplane in the Amazon in the middle of the night with a parachute to make a rescue down there if there was some kind of accident or something.
Now, that's incredible.
That's incredible. That man has used to be his dad now. He was very brave and had a great memory. He was asked because he had a lot of skills. And he was asked to put a team of men, which he did. Something between 2 and 3 dozen men were selected, and the operation received the name of Salsa. And they went to the jungle. Their main goals were, A, to talk to as many witnesses and victims as possible, to write down their reports, evaluate what was going on through their reports. B, to document the phenomenon as thoroughly as possible with photos, videos, radar, portable radar detectors, and everything else. And C, I mean, the third objective, the third goal of the Operation Saucer was, believe it or not, it's in the papers, man, it's in the documents, to establish contact with intelligence beyond the phenomenon. It was from the very beginning, before the operation started, when they assembled the team of people and when they defined the goals, the objectives, there was already a clear notion that there was an intelligence beyond the phenomenon. It means the phenomenon was not meteorological, that was not illusional, that was not parapsychological, whatever, but there was something intelligent in there. Okay, so this man started investigating this thing. They went to the village of Colares, which is in the middle of the island of Colares, and they started doing the investigations day by day. And during night, they would do sky watches. For the first weeks, nothing much happened. The attacks almost stopped. Only a few cases happened here and there, just like that intelligence knew what was going on there. And then, after this initial few weeks, lots of reports were filled. The objects, mainly night objects, nocturnal lights, would start to appear again. And they start day after day, or better, night after night, getting closer and closer to the camping site, where the military were, in a river beach called Humaitá. First night, they would see UFOs or objects or traffic age, just like I explained to you before, at some distance. The other night, there were more objects and closer to the camping site. The other night, more and more objects, closer and closer. And it went on and on. And eventually, the military would change location. They will go from one river beach to another river beach for strategic reasons, to get away from the community, to get more isolated from the people who remain in the island, because most people have just escaped, they run away. 9% of the population of the island just went away. They went to the continent, they didn't want to stay there any longer. And when the military moved their camping, what happened? So did the UFOs.
Huh.
The object moved. Well, Uira Jolanda told me, looking at my eyes, and he said, AJ, he just looked at me so clearly that they knew we were there for them. This is why they started approaching us gradually, night after night. And then at some point, they started showing themselves clearly. And when we moved location, they would move the activity to our near location as well. Isn't that something?
That is something. And also, I've heard that this developed into a close encounter of a third kind.
Yes, yes. Now, with the UFOs coming closer and closer and closer, a lot of pictures were made. A lot of pictures. Mainly of nocturnal lights, but in some of them there was what Holanda used to call a mothership, which was a very big one with lots of small objects around it. Now, altogether, over 3,000 pages of reports were filled, over 500 photos, black and white photos, were taken. And believe it or not, Mel, 16 hours of Super 8 millimeter film were shot of UFOs, including of motherships over Amazon River, deep in the heart of Amazon jungle. Now, it all went bigger and bigger and bigger. And in one particular night of December 1977, the first half of December, Wilanje was with one of his men in a boat, a small boat, by the Guajará Mirim River. He was checking some witness or something about, night. He was starting to head back to the camping because it was dangerous to stay out the camping at night. You can navigate the rivers with small boats because there may be pieces of trees or something, and you can sink.
Mm-hmm.
So he was heading back, but before he did so, a very big cylinder-like object, 100 meters long, which is 300 feet long object, just like a jumbo jet.
Yes.
In a vertical position, just approached the other side of the river, the other margin of the river. It didn't touch ground. It stayed up like 2 or 3 meters from the ground. It was a very big, big thing. And Wilanje Holanda and the other men, they were paralyzed. So, oh my God, we never saw something this big and this close. Out of a sudden, from the upper portion of this object, a small door was open, and a creature just left the object floating in the air, and it came down to the same level where Wilanje Holanda and his men were. And they looked at each other, Wilanje and the alien, from a distance of only a few meters. No contact in a sense of a communication exchange. There was no phrase, no mental telepathic communication, no gesture, nothing. Just looking in the eyes. Both guys looking at each other's eyes. Rita Yolanda looked at into the alien eyes for a few minutes, so did the alien. He was using an entire suit, a suit which was like a uniform, a white uniform with a helmet attached to the uniform. Without saying anything, this creature, this entity, this being, started his way back to the door that he left open. He floated, got into the object, the door closed, and the object, the cylinder-like, huge cylinder-like object, started going up very slowly. With Angel Lanta told me that it looked like they knew that if they go at full power, being so close to them, they would probably harm them.
Right.
So when Angel Lanta took the intelligence beyond the phenomena, now speaking the full words, the aliens, they were very careful about the military, because they went up very slowly, and when they were at some point in the air, then they accelerated enormously. This was the close encounter of third kind, a direct contact with alien that happened. Now, William Jolanda was very excited, extremely excited. He went back to the camping, spoke about what happened to every man, and then the other morning, he went to the town, which is about 100 kilometers from the island of Colares. He went to Belém. He went to see the commander of the airfield, which is the first aerial regional command of Brazil, and a big airfield in Belém, which was run by a brigadier called Protásio de Oliveira. Protásio was a very intelligent man, and Protásio was the guy who assembled the team and put William Jolanda in the command of it. Now, when he went to Protásio and said, "Commander, you can imagine what happened just last night." And he described the contact that he had. And Protásio was taken by an enormous surprise and said, "Oh boy, what we do now?" I think he thought that. What we do now? And he then asked William Jolanda to come back again the other day, because he would have a decision to make about it. Orlando went back home, and when he came back to see Protásio the other day at his room, he was taken by enormous surprise when Protásio said, "Let's shut down Operation Saucer. Bring all your men, turn your equipments back, and handle all your documents, photos, and films to us. The Operation Saucer is finished." He was completely disoriented. He had devoted 4 months of his life, which he told me, the best 4 months of his life. He was establishing contact with other forms of intelligence in the Amazon jungle, and out of sudden, Operation Saucer was shut down? Come on.
Who do you believe that ordered Operation Saucer to be dismantled?
I have no doubt. It happened in 1977. We were under a military dictatorship, just like many other countries in South America, like Argentina, Chile, etc. And you know that U.S. government and CIA especially were supporting those dictatorships in all those countries.
Well, of course, Pinochet and everybody else, sure.
Yes, not only that, CIA took Pinochet, took the antecessor of Pinochet, Allende, killed Allende, and had Pinochet in his place. As well as CIA helped to make dictatorships.
Thanks to Kissinger.
Yeah, yes, that's it. So we had a very strong military dictatorship in Brazil, which was controlled by CIA. I have no doubt whatsoever. And now I have a confirmation of that, Mel, It's not something that I believe. It's something that I know because I was informed. And I had this information confirmed by someone who knew the facts from that time, which is Brigadier José Carlos Pereira, the man that I told you about.
So you're saying that the United States basically ordered this to be shut down?
Or strongly advised, if you know what I mean.
It's the same to me.
Yeah, but see, actually what happened was a formal shutdown of the Operation Saucer. But actually, Operation Saucer never ended under the control of United States military and CIA members. It took a new form, smaller, much more secret, and with all new personnel. Nor Wirangi Holanda nor any of his men took part of what came after Operation Saucer was closed. Now, Operation Saucer changed its name. We still don't know what's the name of the new Operation Saucer. We don't know anything about this format. We don't know anything so far. We only have a confirmation, a very solid confirmation that it never ended for real. And further, do you know that Wirangi Holanda committed suicide back in 1997?
I did not know that.
You did not? Well,
no.
Let me tell you. I've been investigating Operation Saucer since I was a kid. I'm 47 years old. I started my magazine when I was 21 years old. At that time, a little bit before that, by 1982, I went to the Amazon. I went to Belém. I wanted to talk to Wirangi Holanda, who was still on duty. I was already a UFO researcher. I knew about Operation Saucer. I wanted to talk to him. But he never received me. And I tried again a few other times. And one day, we accidentally met in Rio de Janeiro, which was by, I guess, by the end of 80s, early 90s or something. We met. And he was about to retire. But we never had stronger contact than this one. But in June 1997, I gave an interview to a very important TV program here from Globo Network, a program that goes on air on Sunday nights, seen by 70% of population. And I was presented in that show as A.J. Jabbar, hunter of UFO documents from the Brazilian Air Force, something like that. Just something that they decided to do. That was the TV thing. I didn't have anything to do with that. Anyway, I was shown on TV. I gave my interview. I showed a lot of papers, documents from the Brazilian Air Force that leaked in many other circumstances before, photos and etc. It was a very nice show. I spoke for like 50 minutes or so. It was Sunday night. On the very morning of Monday, I get a call at my office. My secretary handles the call and transfers to me and says, there is a man who says he knows you on the phone. He knows you. And he wanted to talk about Operation Saucer, and his name is Wirangi Holanda. I almost fell from my chair. Are you sure?
And she said, wait a second. This is the man you thought committed suicide?
Yes.
Huh.
Much before it happened. And this gentleman said, hey, AJ, you remember me? I said, of course, Colonel, how are you? I'm fine. I'm living in Rio. I'm retired. I wanted to tell you that I watched the show yesterday, and it was great. You are doing a great job. And I want to tell you something. All the times that you searched for me before, I couldn't receive you in my offices. But now I'm retired. I have no more relationship with the Brazilian Air Force. And I'm at your service. If you want to talk to me, just come to see me in Rio. And I'll give you all information you possibly want. Can you imagine that?
Of course.
And I did so. I went to Rio. I went to Rio like a week later. I met my co-editor, Marco Antonio Petit, and we went to Northern Real Estate in a city called Cabo Frio, where William Jolando was living. And we stayed for 2 long days at this man's apartment. We slept there, we ate there, we wouldn't leave there. We spent almost 48 hours with the gentleman, hearing his stories, and he had so many. Oh boy, he had stories. He had a very vivid memory of everything that he went through while his military years, and especially, of course, Operation Saucer. And he gave us a taped and a videotaped recorded interview, very long, with full of days of Operation Saucer. That was one of the most special moments in my life since I started investigating UFOs, which is forever. That man became instantly my idol. I had a great respect for him. I started as a friend. We knew that that man was a very lonely man living in Rio. And we, not only I, but also Marco Antonio Petit, we started this nice friendship. And we started talking almost daily when I got back home. Or he would call me, or I would call him, and we would spend like 1 hour at least on the phone, almost every night, talking. And he was always very precise, his memories were very clear about the whole thing. That was amazing. It was amazing. Now, I started to the transcript of his interview to publish in the Brazilian UFO magazine.
Now, AJ, I don't mean to interrupt you, but he is the one who actually saw the alien being?
That's the very one. That's the man.
Did he describe the alien to you?
Yes, it was just like a human being.
Huh.
Two arms, two legs, a body and a head, using this uniform and a helmet, a white uniform and a white helmet with a shield, a windshield, a glass shield. He could see his eyes. They stood at each other by the riverbanks. That was the man. And not only that, after the Operation Saucer was closed, he continued his private investigations of the phenomenon, and he had other contacts as well. It's very serious. Now, we interviewed the guy by late July. We had the interview completely transcribed by late July. And I intended to publish in the August and in September editions of the Brazilian UFO magazine. But I have a trip to Australia where I gave a lecture in Brisbane and in Sydney. And I spent like almost 2 weeks down there, and it delayed the publication of the interview at least 1 month. So it came out in October, in the October edition of the magazine, which was released by the 15th. However, on the 17th, on the 2nd, the 2nd of October 1997, we learned through a phone call that William Jolanda had committed suicide. He was a very lonely and depressed man. He committed suicide. Unfortunately, he committed suicide.
Was that proven, that he actually committed suicide?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. A lot of theories arose, such as he was suicided.
Exactly.
But that's not a fact, because why would anybody kill him after he had spoken? We already have the material being printed in the magazine, which will be released just a few more days. And why wouldn't they kill me or Marco Antonio Petit? Because we also had the tapes of his revelation. So there is no point in believing that the man was killed. He actually committed suicide. He have tried before. But let me tell you why I spoke to you about the publication. I was intending to publish before August, before October 15th. By September or perhaps August 15th, 1997. And if I have done so, which I didn't because I didn't have time, but if I haven't done so, perhaps he wouldn't kill himself. Why? Because in the introduction of the interview, I made like a foreword where I described the man that I met, how brave he was, how courageous he was in the charge of Operation SOS, and how generous he was in sharing this information with us all. Perhaps if the magazine where I published this information have been released sooner, and if he had read it, perhaps he would think twice before taking his life. I don't know. I believe so. I'll have to live with that. But it was something very strong for us all. Unfortunately, that man is no longer with us, but his legacy is all over. His interview that he gave to me and Marco Antonio Petit has been translated in so many languages and is all over the world. That is a man who disclosed to us what we consider to be the biggest military operation known so far to investigate UFOs, and it happened here in Brazil, in the Amazon. It's very...
Why did he tell you? Did he tell you why the secrecy?
Why did he disclose the information to me?
No. Did he tell you why is it that governments keep it so secret?
No. He had a notion at that time. We're speaking about 1997.
Yeah.
He had a notion that Operation Saucer shouldn't have been dismissed, and perhaps it wasn't. But none of us had any clue that it was kept in activity under a different format. He didn't know that. He didn't have a clue of why the military closed the Operation Saucer. Now, except that he thought that Protásio, the brigadier who was his head, he was his superior in the first Aérea Regional Command of Belém. He was afraid of the consequences if it was kept, if the operation continued with contacts with the aliens. He was afraid of that. So I believe that Wieringer knew that. Now we know that the Operation Saucer had to change its format to something more secret.
Now, from what he said, and I know these interviews are out there translated, but can you give us some highlights of the most important aspects of the conversations you had with him before he committed suicide?
Oh, yes, there's so many. Actually, we have this information translated into English in our website, which is ufo.com.br. We have produced a few months ago a documentary which contains the entire interview, which will be available in English soon through our website. And the things that this man described to us was amazing. Now, he confirmed without any kind of doubt that really over 3,000 pages of reports were filled with people who have been witnesses or victims of the phenomenon. Also, he confirmed that his men took over 500 pictures of UFOs and at least 16 hours of footage of the objects. One thing that comes to my mind, in especial of what he said, was that there was a particular type of saucer, type of object, which was small, and he had called it as a sport type UFO. Sport type UFO, because it was smaller, that was the object that would get closer to the campings, sometimes very close, it will come to the camping either over the water or over the trees. But he was very frustrated because they tried as much as possible to take pictures of that object, and none of the pictures would come out okay, clear, none. Until one day that some U.S. military, again, Mel, U.S.
Yes.
military, they were visiting the airfield in Belém because of the Operation Saucer, and they met, this military met with Orej Yolanda and asked him about his results. And he described his frustration because he couldn't take a clear picture of that kind of object. And the U.S. military then gave to him a special camera with a special kind of film and taught him how to use it, how to handle it.
I knew you were going to say that.
And they got back to the jungle. The U.S. military got with them. And from that moment on, they start making very clear, beautiful, nice picture of the Sport Model UFO.
Do you still have any of those pictures?
No. We have so far something like 150 and 250 photos, but they are very low quality. The best quality material has not surfaced yet, has not been disclosed.
And folks, AJ, we have to take our one and only intermission. Why don't you go ahead and give the audience the links to your website and how we get in touch with all your wonderful work.
You can download this material from ufo.com.br, BR for Brazil. It's all in Portuguese, of course, but the captions are in English.
And we have links on our website as well. And when we come back, folks, I want to talk to AJ, continue with this conversation. I want to know also if they had any footage from that close encounter of the third kind. There's a couple of cases that have fascinated me for a long time. And I'm talking about the one that a lot of people email me about, the Virginia case. I know AJ has probably spoken about this a million times, but I'm sure he won't mind to talk about it again. In addition, there is a case that many people talk about, and it's a human mutilation. And I know that AJ was a little bit hesitant to talk about this, but I want him to talk about it. So stay with us. You don't want to miss the rest of the show. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to talk more with our special guest in our members section. Head on over to our website, veritasshow.com. Click on subscribe and join us in the members area to tune in to the second part of this great show. We'll take a short break, listen to some music, and we'll be right back with more. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Brooks Agnew, and you're listening to Veritas.